So here we are once again, huddled all around our laptops, our portable devices, or if you're feeling feisty, your large screen television devices, to watch another AEW Dynamite review here on the Mr. Warren Hayes Show. Hello, I'm Mr. Warren Hayes, back again this week. It is March 28th, 2024. To talk about last night's Dynamite review, of course, the March 27, 2024 edition that hailed from my hometown of Quebec City and at the Videotron Center, or as the locals will say, Le Centre Videotron. That's what we're going to talk about today. Hope you're going to enjoy it. You know, you can preemptively like this. You know, hit the little like button, and then you like, and then you could become like a prognosticator. You can be like, this is going to be good. I can feel it in my bones. Like, and then when you get to the end and you liked it, you're like, hell yeah, maybe I have powers. Maybe I'm an X-Men. And also subscribe if this is your first time here on the channel. And if you're listening to this on your favorite podcast application, hello, cheerio, tip of the day, top of the day, whatever the fuck. This is one of my all-time worst intros. five-star reviews on Apple, five-star ratings on Spotify. You know the drill by now. Do I have a hair hanging here? If you're not watching the audio, my beard's a mess. Ever since the operation, since I'm convalescing and taking it easy, I don't feel the urge to shave as much. So I've been leaving it grow out a lot. I did trim it, but I think I might be due for another trim. Does that look okay? See, there's this one beard hair. Where is it? Here. At first, I thought it was a hair, but it's not. All right, Warren, Jesus Christ. the availability of tickets at the Videotron Center, Le Centre Videotron, was very. I don't know why I say it. I'm sorry. This is going to get on rails real soon. I promise. Stick around to find out just how long it takes me to get this review on rails. The available tickets for the show last night, according to WrestleTix, were minimal. But the setup was about, I'd say, about a third of what, maybe a little more than a third. What the Videotron Center can hold overall. I mean, it was designed to be a big modern facility to hopefully host an NHL team, and that didn't work out. That's a whole other discussion for a whole other time and a whole other podcast, really. Nonetheless, according to WrestleTix, as of now, and this, I don't think this is the final count yet. 4,117 tickets distributed for last night's show, which is pretty good for the AEW averages recently. I think, you know, this is not a bad house. It's still a big venue. By the way, I was there. I got my ticket and it would have been pretty ridiculous of me to not go to an AEW show while they're in my hometown, while I've seen AEW shows in Chicago, in Milwaukee, in Toronto, Montreal, and they're like 15 minutes away from my house and I don't go. Yeah, that would have been pretty stupid. So I was there. I was thankful that there was like the 4,000 people who were there, you could feel nonetheless, though, They had, of course, full sections of the arena were tarped off, you know, on the hard cam side. But you know, you could feel a good atmosphere. I think, I don't know how it came across on TV, but the audience overall was really into it. I was having a good time. I thought it was a very, very good Dynamite. Spoiler alert. So all things considered, I think we ended up with a good number, especially considering the following. I thought that we would never break 3,000 tickets. I was, in my mind, I was saying, if AEW comes to my hometown, where AEW has no brand recognition at all, like, don't even kid yourselves, there's no brand recognition when it comes to AEW around here. If we're able to get 3,000 tickets, I think that will be a success, right? Now it's, we broke the 4K mark, so I'm pleasantly surprised. I would wager that probably the higher number count came because of people making the trek from Montreal to Quebec to come see the Dynamite, especially after they announced Shibata Ospreay and Strickland Takeshita, which I think these are ticket movers. For hardcore fans, if I were in Montreal and I was like, oh shit, I could see Will Ospreay versus Katsuyori Shibata like 2.5 hours away from where I live. Yeah, hell yeah, I'm doing it. I'm jumping in a car. I'm getting the ride share. I'm taking the train. Don't take the train is so fucking expensive. I don't know how it is. In Europe, the train is tremendous, right? I don't know how it is in the United States. Never taking the train in the US. But here, the train via rail is so incredibly expensive. And you're not really that well seated. It's not a pleasant travel experience. It really is not. You know, and they do ads all the time. They do ads on social media and stuff. You know, maybe we Canadians or our East Coasters, us East Coasters, see a lot of these. They do so many of these ads where it's like, kick back, relax, you know, and people are smiling and they're being offered drinks and so on. But it is anything but a pleasant experience. And it doesn't go really faster than taking your car. Like I've never taken the train where I've gained in like a half hour or something like that, where you're like, yeah, we don't have to deal with traffic, you know? Because one of the main advantages of taking the train, like from Quebec City to go to Montreal, is to avoid traffic once you hit the island of Montreal, which is, you know, notoriously stupid and bad. So you're like, well, I'll take the train and I'll avoid the traffic. So sure, you don't have to deal with traffic, which is fine. I can, yet like there's that psychological element, which I understand you're avoiding, but you're not gaining in time. Like there's no, I don't see the benefit of the train. So hopefully if any Montrealers came to town last night to see the show, hopefully you didn't take the train. You took the bus. You know, the bus is just about as expensive. But they're regular, they're on time, you know, you're somewhat better seated. What are we talking about? Oh yeah. I know they did a lot of promotion with a local radio station here. One of their star hosts was in attendance last night. He was front row. Facing the hard cam last night. You may have seen him because A lot of people were chanting his name and he was turning around to react to them. He was wearing a red jersey of our local minor league team, the minor league hockey team, the Ramparts, Les Remparts. So there was some promotion that was done there. Look, my assessment here is that I'm pleasantly surprised. And, you know, maybe this is an indication that they might come back. I hope that... I felt the crowd was good. They brought some good matches. I thought Dynamite was very good. Stayed for the Rampage taping. I think Rampage was entirely skippable this week, but, you know, that's whatever. But it was a good time. That's not true. I was going to say something completely false. I have mostly had tremendous live experiences with AEW. And the trend continues. Wait, when was the time you didn't have the Milwaukee show? Which was the one that... I guess a lot of things have been blocked out in my mind. But I think the Milwaukee show that I saw was the one that was main evented by Malakai Black and Brock Anderson. If you want to, right? If you want to remember that one, I think that's the one. my greatest memory of that show was how over Matt Hardy was with people. Like, the Hardys in general are just fucking over, right? Anyway, we're moving on here. I swear I can't keep this on rails. Unlike the train, which usually stays on rails, but is a miserable experience. See, here's the difference between me and the train right now. The train stays on rails, but it's a miserable experience. Me? We're derailing. We're going back and forth. We're tipping over into the ditch on occasion, but we're having a good time doing it, right? These are not mind-bogglingly fantastic numbers, but we're not selling out every venue like WWE does. But this is a good one. This is better. And, you know, I've seen a lot of talk about, you know, AEW is cold right now. Look at the attendance numbers. And we've talked about this numerous times. But if you look at the numbers and you look at how the pay-per-views are acting and so on and so forth, and the fact that they decided to run smaller buildings as well, like the Coca-Cola Coliseum, instead of going to the Air Canada Center, you can absolutely tell that you can see that attendance is actually in a better spot than it was months ago. I really believe I'm part of the group that believes that the creative switch that AEW undertook last year with MJF as world champion, the Brochacho stuff, the Adam stuff, and then leading into Timeless Tony and all, the more sports entertainy stuff that they started to do, the more they disenchanted their fans, and a lot of people just walked away where they were like, well, this is not what I signed up for. And it's going to take some, because attendance did start to fizzle down. And I think, not only do I think, I know that it's going to take some time to reconstruct, to rebuild that trust. And I believe that Tony's emphasis on the Continental Classic late last fall and getting back to matches, restoring great matches that people are excited to see, you know, the good old restore the feeling beat. I think these are conscious efforts. These are conscious efforts made by AEW to bring back their fans. I'm not talking lapsed fans, you know, or casual, but the fans that were there that signed up for AEW from the get-go under the guise of it being an alternative, they're like, no, look, we're coming, we're going back to what made us great. And then he signs Ospreay, he signs Okada, signs Monet. like, there's a concerted effort to bring people back, and this will take time. You know, there's not going to be a sudden spike in attendance all of a sudden. That's just like, boop, out of nowhere. Same thing goes for ratings, but we're talking about butts in seats. There's a difference between that and, you know, look, bringing out, trotting out The Rock over on the WWE side of things is a tremendous boon. It's a tremendous asset. Like, that's outside of the, there's no one else in pro wrestling anywhere who could generate that kind of spike outside of The Rock, who is, you know, the biggest movie star in the world. Is it still him? At least he was. I mean, he's still a huge star regardless, you know, international movie star, Dwayne Johnson, coming in, sitting down, doing his shtick, cursing, sending the WWE universe ablaze, getting Cody Rhodes to bleed. Hey, that Rock Cody Rhodes match at WrestleMania is going to be great, isn't it? What a great build. Oh, wait. Hey, that Drew McIntyre CM Punk match at WrestleMania is going to be tremendous. What a great build. Oh, wait. Tipping over towards the ditch again. Are you having a good time? So, those are my thoughts on the attendance. On the attendance right now. I'm sure everyone would like it to be in a better place, attendance-wise. But, you know, they made the choice. You can see they're starting to make the choice of running smaller buildings like they're doing for Dynasty. And like they're doing for Double or Nothing. Because Double or Nothing 2024, the date was announced yesterday, I believe, on social media before it hit. I wasn't super online yesterday. So I think it was announced before Dynamite. May 26 is when they're doing the old Double or Nothing, and they're going back to the MGM Grand Garden Arena, the site of the inaugural Double or Nothing back all the way back in 2019, because the last two, it's always been in Vegas, essentially, right? Outside of the pandemic era, Double or Nothing's. I think Tony feels like Vegas is Double or Nothing's home, but they were at the T-Mobile Arena, an arena that is somewhat larger than the MGM Grand Arena. So, AEW had mentioned this, right? I can't remember in what context, probably Tony on a media call, but they were saying that they were thinking of running smaller venues. And I am all for that. We've talked about it. I think we just talked about it last week, talking about the Coca-Cola Arena. And now they're doing it again with the Grand Garden, with the MGM Grand Garden Arena. A slightly smaller venue than what they usually run. But if you can get that up to capacity, it's much more interesting to have to have the vision of a full building than to have a big building that has spotty attendance and whole sections are empty. Like, you can't air that on TV. It looks like garbage. But if you do that, you pull up your, you fill up a 10,000, 11,000 seat arena, it looks great. And it's good for morale. It's good for the wrestlers who feel like they're performing in front of a full live crowd, which they are. It looks better for you. And, you know, even if it's not, you know, a big arena, I mean, even if it's not the United Center, a sold out show is a sold out show. You can say your show was sold out. You know, that's something in show business that has always existed. It's something that I was confronted with in past experiences in my life. It's like, no, let's run a smaller venue, sell it out, because then next time people will buy tickets. Then we can maybe upgrade. People will buy tickets faster, and maybe we can sell out something a little bigger next time. Like, to me, this makes perfect sense. You know, I don't have an issue with this, especially when you consider that Double or Nothing last year. You remember an adventure that was to follow the progression of ticket sales, right? Because there was a, if memory serves me right, and please feel free to correct me if you know my old age brain is coming in the way here. Good pre-sale. The initial amount of tickets that were sold were very promising, but then like pretty much after the opening few days after the pre-sale, it basically stopped. There was nothing else happening, right? There was just nothing else going on. Now, and they had to, they being AEW, they had to like discount tickets really deeply, and they had to do these, combo packages. Remember all of this? Like it was they worked hard to get in, what was like about 10,000 people into the T-Mobile Arena last year. Like they worked their asses off to get people into that building, as opposed to this year where it's like, well, you kind of feel like it's a smarter strategy. How will they be able to get up to capacity? I don't know. We'll follow that like we usually do here. But AEW pay-per-views usually perform well. They're usually some of the better houses that they have on their tours during their year, outside, look, excluding Wembley. Okay, Wembley Stadium is always going to be the exception to the rule. Okay, so whenever we talk about good attendances, best attendances, you know, we have to put the asterisk that excluding Wembley, because Wembley's a thing. It's its own self-contained universe. You know. Are the ticket sales going to be? Are the ticket prices going to be? More accessible? Because that was a problem, if I'm not mistaken, as well, last year. I still maintain, because whenever we talk about ticket prices and I bring it up, that is, yeah, ticket prices are a little more expensive. Some folks will be like, well, Warren, you keep saying that ticket prices shouldn't be a problem to selling your show because if your product is hot, people will buy them at any price. Well, that's exactly. The AEW product right now doesn't feel super hot, doesn't have that level of hotness that can justify you selling tickets at outrageous prices, no nosebleeds at 800 or whatever. You know, that's, I can have both opinions. I can say the ticket prices are a little high, but also in the same breath tell you, but they wouldn't have this problem if the product was hot. You know, I still believe that if AEW worked on its creative, worked on its and delivered constantly great matches and felt hot, we would not be having this conversation about will the ticket prices to Double or Nothing be lower this year. No one has this conversation when it comes to WrestleMania. You know what I mean? Like, no one ever says, I wonder if the tickets for WrestleMania are going to be a little lower this year because Cody was really hot last year. And no one, tickets for WrestleMania, you pay out the ass for them. That's all. You want to see WrestleMania, you're going to pay out the ass for them. And with reason. This is not a knock. With reason. Because the product is super, super duper hot. The WWE fans are enamored with everything World Wrestling Entertainment is doing these days. They can do no wrong. So that's fine. You know, that's it. It's like the product looks, feels hot. So people are like, yeah. And it's WrestleMania. You have a 30-year-old, 40-year-old brand that has withstood the test of time and that has grown into a mainstream, well-known name. Like, you know, your grandmother knows what WrestleMania is. Assuming your grandmother doesn't watch pro wrestling, which a lot of grandmothers do. Watch pro wrestling, I mean. So, you know, that's it. It's like this conversation doesn't apply to WWE shows. No one's like, oh, will the ticket prices be lower? We got to move on and not just spend our time talking about ticket prices here. We got a show to review. But anyway, Double or Nothing, May 26th, MGM Grand Garden Arena. We're back. Going to keep an eye on that. But we'll get through Dynasty first. I was going to call it Destiny. Is Destiny a good name for a pay-per-view? I don't think so. Let's start with the show. Now, of course, there's a lot of things like... Since I was there live, all I can talk about is really what I saw and heard live. There's things that happen, that probably happen, that you guys, gals and non-binary pals, saw really well on screen that eluded me, or that there were storyline beats that were being promoted by commentary. So, of course I can't talk on that. I can only talk about what I saw in the arena, which in this arena... The first match that was bestowed upon us was Will Ospreay versus Katsuyori Shibata. They started off by airing footage from their match from 7 years ago, which was tremendous. This is how it should be, right? This is how it should be. Just calling up your partner, calling up another promotion. I just need a little bit of footage from their time here. Okay. And you like, that's a hell. When Tony Khan talks about how healthy his relationship with New Japan is, I buy it. I believe it. I believe it. There's too many signs that there is a healthy relationship going on. And look, we'll always see how it turns out once we start getting close to Forbidden Door time, right? But as it stands right now, a lot of people were a little worried of how the new regime, the Hiroshi Tanahashi era of leadership in New Japan was going to affect the relationship with AEW. I'd say right now, things seem pretty chill. Things seem pretty normal. I don't think there's any signs of panic that are needed here. Anyway, after the match, after airing the footage, they had an absolutely tremendous match. Shocker. Ospreay read it. And here's something that I liked here. Will Ospreay wrestled like he still had to overcome Shibata, right? Shibata still came across as the vet, the master, and Ospreay kind of, And Ospreay was working from underneath in this one, which is interesting, considering that it's Will Ospreay, probably the greatest wrestler on planet Earth right now. But I thought that was a fun little story, and Shibata got his stuff in, hard hitting, and nice and proper, violent. Ospreay looked tremendous, and so did Shibata. Is Shibata back? And what I mean by that is Shibata out of the bubble wrap zone where it's like, oh, let's be careful. We can't, his brain was taken out of his head and put back in. Can we take him out? Have we removed the bubble wrap? Is Katsuyori Shibata back? Because he's eaten, hidden blades to the noggin and a Tiger Driver 91. Is he back? Because I'm sitting there and I'm going like this. Like, please don't die, kind of thing. No, this was a tremendous opener. I love this so much. I'd give this a 4.25 stars. I think that's good. I thought this was great. I thought it was a great match, great opener. And Ospreay is excellent as always, but... What I really appreciated here is how I felt like we were getting Shibata back. Like, he's getting back into this groove. And it's tremendous. I don't know what kind of sauce these guys are on. I don't know what kind of doctors are clearing them. Why some promotions will be like nope, and others will be, you know, Danielson and Copeland and Shibata, you know, who all had very serious career-ending injuries, where they were told, "No, you'll never be able to do that again." And now they're still doing it, and they're doing tremendous work. I don't know, or it's the treatments. At some point, someone is going to have to do a deep dive, because it's not going to be me, because I'm not knowledgeable enough to get into this. But someone is going to have to do a deep dive here to break down how major wrestling promotions have shut down the careers of guys who obviously can still go. And while breaking down to us what treatments brought them back down this path, what was done to make them be able to wrestle again, and how risky is it? Is there still got to be risk involved? You know what I mean? Like, they can't just be getting out there and, hell yeah, hit, you know, Shibata couldn't have been like to Ospreay, yeah, hit me in the head. And Ospreay's like, fucking fantastic, let's go, bruv. You know, it's like, if anything, Will Ospreay had to be like, are you sure? You know, Yeah, drop me on my head with your moves. No, like, anyway, but then again, you know, wrestlers are they're a special breed. Sometimes common sense. But this was great. This really, really was great. 4.25 stars. I thought this was tremendous. This show was tremendous. I'm still not used. I think it's going to take a while. But I'm still not used to seeing Will Ospreay weekly on television, on American TV wrestling. I'm just not used to it. Will Ospreay, you know, in the past couple of years, you know, he's an attraction. You know, it's like, oh, it's an Ospreay match, let's fucking go, you know. And you make time out of your schedule, and you... Now it's like, he's there every week. He's there every week. And if he's not doing great matches with Kyle Fletcher and Katsuyori Shibata, he's cutting tremendous promos. We have Will Ospreay on television doing great Will Ospreay stuff on a weekly basis. I hope it's not lost on people. And for me, it's going to take some time to get used to. I'm still like, wow, this is wild. This is a TV taping I'm sitting at. And, you know, I saw him fight fucking Kenny Omega, you know, a little less than a year. And, you know, and now he's like, Katsuyori Shibata on a TV taping. It's wild. It's wild to me. Anyway, let's keep on moving. We got a tremendous video package for Bryan Danielson following this up. I saw some discussion. I wasn't not involved, but I observed a lot of discussion regarding people saying there were too many video packages. You know, I know the great fear of the video package in WWE style, you know, where they have to explain everything in a video package. They have to recap what happened 4 minutes ago in a video package. They have to break down the last week's stuff in a video package. You always have to get video packages because you're too dumb to understand things. I'll tell you one thing. I'll tell you that I thought all of these video packages that they did tonight, they were all tremendous. And they all established character, motive, build, all things that you'd get out of a promo, ultimately. As someone who was watching... live in the arena, I appreciated these little video packages, because then you don't have Konosuke Takeshita and Don Callis coming out to cut a promo for later on in the evening. You don't have Swerve Strickland coming out to cut a promo for the rest of the evening. You don't have Danielson doing a response back. I thought the flow of all of this was much better. I, sitting there live last night, everything that happened in the ring were fights. And I thought the pacing was great. And the video packages, of course, ensure this pacing is maintained. Because no one's going long. No, you know, nothing's being goofy. You're not doing the entrance. And you know, it's just, you keep your show streamlined. I didn't mind them. And I didn't mind these kinds of video packages where I find they are very well done. And they're not just hammering home. They're not just hammering home the same things over and over again. And they're not done awkwardly with the, you know, the weird WWE cadence and whatnot. They all feel natural. They all feel like little sports vignettes, you know. I thought the Don Callis Kanesuke Takeshita hyping one was tremendous. I thought it was great. Swerve's was good too. This Danielson one, I thought it was outstanding. Outstanding. We're getting back, pulling back footage from New Japan once again. You know, and Ring of Honor, of course. And I like how nothing was mentioned of the WWE run. Like nothing. Like it's like he was bound to be an international superstar, but then his career was taken from him. Like, wait, what are you trying to say? Are you trying to say his career was taken from him because of the injury? Or because WWE had him tone down his wrestling style and had him wrestle their style? You know what I mean? What did that? It would have been really ballsy. It would have been really ballsy and kind of cool for AEW to be like, yeah, and he went to WWE and they shut him down and said he would never wrestle again. Like, that would have been fine. That would have been absolutely okay, you know? Especially considering, anyway. I'm not getting into the periphery of stuff here. Try to stay on rails a little bit, Warren. At least for, you know, a short distance. I just think it would have been really ballsy for AEW to mention a WWE. Because look, here's the thing. Like, you know, I've again talked about this before, but it's been a while. You know, it's weird. I find it weird when people say, oh, she's a WWE guy, gal. And now they're in AEW and it's all WWE guys, all former WWE guys. WWE was the only game in town for the better part of two decades, right? So there's inevitably, when you're recruiting, you know, yes, you can. Yes, it's important that you invest in the future and that you build new stars. But new stars will only take you so far. You need established acts. You need people who are solid, that are good wrestlers, good performers. You need those people as well. You know, a lot of them that you're just going to pull. There's just a lot of them you're going to pull that are former WWE or who left WWE to do something because it was the only game in town for two decades. So what do you want from me? You know, it's like, yes. Yes, yes. Some of them are a little more shocking. Yes, you know, John Moxley when he was, because John Moxley immediately left to go to AEW, you know, and Adam Copeland, when he showed up, I think that was a big deal. Mercedes is a big deal as well. Like, I understand the logic of it, but it's still going to be a thing, you know? Anyway, packages, video packages. Yeah, it didn't bother me. Especially live. I think it's the best way to go. Instead of having, you know, backstage segments and long in-ring promos. This rule, like, I have no complaints. And if it's just going to recap a little bit, add a little more heat to the main event, that's fine. You know, we're not doing pointless, you know, things where it's like, oh, last week, Maxine Dupri tried to do the worm. It's like, who cares? It's like, you're doing video packages for the main event of your show. I think that's fine. I think that's absolutely fine. You're doing a video package where, you know, still putting Adam Copeland over for winning the TBS title and he's still bloodied and bruised and, you know, and he's talking about how it was great that the Toronto audience was singing his theme. You know, it's like, and it was, you know, let's talk about this a little more. Let's put that over. Yes. Yes. It's the kind of thing AEW should do more of, you know, put over their big, their organic successes like this. The Bucks are backstage being interviewed by Renee. They put over their match for later on with Private Party, harkening back to their history with Private Party. They even did a little video montage of that as well, showing the history. And I mean, look, again, this is something that happened 5 years ago. I'm okay with them rehashing highlights. It's not as if it happened last week. It's like Private Party got the big win. Will they be able to repeat tonight? No, yeah. And then, wasn't it then, soon thereafter, that we got Kazuchika Okada arriving at the arena in a Ferrari? And I laughed. Because during I'll just clear this out of the way right now. During the match with the Bucks, right? Okada's scene with the belt, right? Looking at a screen going, yes, yes, ha, 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 you know, kind of thing. And I can't help but find it extremely funny that they flew Okada up to Canada, up to our little neck of the woods here. They flew him all the way up here, okay? Rented a Ferrari and had him just to have Okada step out of the car and then do one of these at the screen. Priceless gold. And yes, in case you're wondering, he was on location with the Ferrari. I recognize he was at the arena. Then there's a bus stop right there. And then there was the big bus stop in the background. That's where he was. So he was there. This wasn't pre-tape. So they flew him in for that. And then I was like, oh shit, is Okada going to come out? No, nothing. No Kazuchika. No live in the flesh Kazuchika Okada. He was only on screen. That fly him in and they rent a Ferrari. That's funny to me. It's just funny. Anyway, that leads us to the AEW World Tag Team Tournament quarterfinal match where the Young Bucks defeated Private Party. I, again, thought this match was very good. I thought, look, the Falcon Arrow off the barricade to the floor was just tremendous. The whole audience was up out of their seat for that one. That was a great spot, great pop. I thought this was fast, well done, a great final stretch, fun near falls. Even though the Bucks won with the EVP trigger, that was a little messy, a lot messy. You know, which, that's a disaster. You know, and Private Party do more bang for your buck as well. You know, I'm like, okay, all right, this is fun. I'm enjoying this. I gave it 3.75 stars. I think the finish, like the final, not just the EVP trigger. There's a couple of things there towards the end where I'm like, took me out of it a little bit. But I still thought this was a very good, tremendous match. And I'm not a big Private Party fan. There's a lot of things about Private Party that doesn't connect. I think the gimmick's obnoxious. It doesn't speak to me. Like, it's not for me, right? But I think it's obnoxious. And I think they're mid. I think they're a very mid tag team. Everyone, you know, myself included, because I was not familiar with their indie work. So my real first exposure to them was in the quarterfinal match, right? Last of the original, no, not the quarterfinal match, the first match of the fucking tournament for the inaugural AEW tag team title. And, you know, like everyone, I think, was like, holy shit, this team is great, you know? And it turned out that they're kind of sloppy and they're very mid and, they do great high spots, but there's no tissue that connects. You know, there's no flow to their matches. I don't like, again, I don't think they're as great a tag team. I think soon thereafter, after them defeating the Bucks, them upsetting the Bucks in the tournament 5 years ago, I think a lot of us sort of started to see that, oh, wait, these guys aren't so great. And I don't think they've really recovered. And now they come into this match, they look great. So all I can sit here and say, like, what's the connective tissue here? What's the through line between their two great matches that I think they've had in AEW? Well, it's the Bucks. So you're wrestling one of the greatest tag teams of all time, and you have a great match. Okay, well, there you go. You wrestle any other team, and it sort of flounders. You're kind of like, all right, not bad, sure, pretty good, not good. It's always in that vicinity. I don't have a problem with Private Party not getting the win here. I know for some reason a lot of people said, oh, it should be Private Party. No, it should be the Bucks. The Bucks should win this fucking tournament. BCC, my prediction was Blackpool Combat Club facing FTR in the finals, right? I felt that that's what they were going for. But we're not doing that right now, apparently. So it's the Bucks. Like, who else? It's going to be the Bucks. With the new elite being crowned a dynasty? Kazuchika Okada has gold. The Bucks have gold. Hello? This shit books itself. And FTR, I think FTR need this. I think, we talked about it recently as well. You know, I think FTR are on a bit of a rehabilitation tour. You know, to a degree that they're getting back in there. They're doing great matches. They're keeping it simple. They're keeping their promo simple. There's no more CM Punk. There's no more Dax podcast. There's no more weird tweeting. Sure, you know, Cash pulled a gun on a dude, but you know, he didn't pull it. He flashed a gun. Okay, I'm gonna use it. Allegedly, that's the other thing. I think that I've gotten back into a groove where I feel excited about watching FTR matches again. Where for a time I was like, oh, guys, it's enough. Let's just move on, kind of thing. So the Bucks are going to win this tournament. It has to be the Bucks. That's my official prediction. It has to be the Bucks. But then again, here I am saying, well, the Bucks have to beat Sting and Darby Allin. So what do I know? Then we get the Don Callis video package about Takeshita that I spoke about a little earlier. Mercedes Moné is shown arriving at the building in a big car. And she steps out, so we go to commercial. When we come back, Tony Hawk is with Darby Allin. I did not realize that Darby was supposed to climb Mount Everest for charity. For Tony Hawk's charity. So, I guess it's a double bummer that he got injured. But this is, you know, it's a nice little make-do, you know, to promote the charity on AEW. I'm like, okay, cool. That's actually pretty fun. Yeah, it's, you know, Tony Hawk, you know, saying how skate parks were important for him, you know, to help him find purpose, find a sense of community, find some weed. He didn't say the weed part. God damn you. Come on, y'all know what happens at skate parks. What are we doing here? No, but nonetheless, you know, I'm joking because I do believe the positive impact that skate parks can have on the youths. I really do. So, you know, the good little charity, that was nice. If Darby isn't going to be climbing Mount Everest to build a skate park at the top, I guess, I don't know. That'd be pretty wild. That'd be pretty... going off rails again. No, but it was nice. A good little, fine little video package again. But I'm like, okay. Then Tony Hawk doing moves off of Darby's broken foot. Rene Paquette is backstage with Hook and Chris Jericho. And basically, Jericho says, listen, I'm going to be your manager. That's, you know, if you want it, it's yours. I'll be your manager. And then Hook says he appreciates it. And of course, he'll accept the advice. But you're Chris Jericho, and I know who you are. And I know who you are. And I'm sitting there, and I'm cracking up laughing. Because I know what he's meant to say, what they're meaning to do here. Excuse me. Hook is basically saying, right? I can only trust you as far as I can throw you, Chris Jericho. Because you have a tendency to, you know, to turn on people. So that's what he's saying. Like, I know who you are. But the way he delivered it, he said, you're Chris Jericho. I know who you are. There was no inflection. There was no little spice to the line to where you would have gone, but you're Chris Jericho. And I know who you are. You know, kind of thing where he just, Hook delivers the line so flatly where it's like, he's actually saying, hey, you're Chris Jericho. I know who you are. I was just cracking up. I thought that was the funniest thing. I thought that was real, real funny. Is it just me? It could be just me. But anyway, so look, if Jericho wants to take a little breaky break from in-ring performing and do the manager thing, could do worse. Again, I keep saying, the thing with Chris Jericho is that he gets TV time. And if you're affiliated with him, if you're up against him, if you're whatever, you're in a program with him in any way, shape, or form, you're going to get that TV time too. Like Hook has been on television every week ever since he started up this thing with Jericho. He's been on television every week. And that's how he's going to improve. That's how he's going to get better, more comfortable in front of the camera. They're going to give him tips on how to deliver lines. You know, things that don't come natural to him because, you know, he's a judo lacrosse player. So, you know, he's not an actor. I just saw the hair again. I can't seem to get it. I'm sorry. I'm obsessive with it. TBS title number one contendership four-way match. Willow Nightingale defeated Chris Statlander, Anna Jay, and Sky Blue. Again, I thought this was good. I thought this was very good. I have no qualms about this match. I thought everyone performed well. And, you know, I'm not a super fan of four-ways, but I think everyone looked good here. Man, people really like Chris Statlander. I'm not saying that shockingly, but maybe a little to a degree. I'm like, she gets really good reactions, and she got great reactions last night. When she'd do stuff, when she came out, when she'd do stuff, people really like Chris Statlander. But, you know, she's a power wrestler. You know, since her injury, she stopped using a lot of her jumping aerial offense. She's not that she's completely X'd out, but she's converted to a more ground-based approach, which is good because both her knees are completely shot. So, and I think it's working out for her, and I think the audience is picking up on it, and I think she's a natural fit for it as well. She's doing stuff that a lot of women in the division don't necessarily do because there aren't many powerhouses. There's Willow, there's Nyla, there's who else is perceived as a powerhouse wrestler in the AEW women's division. A lot of them are, you know, Jamie Hayter. That's about it. You know, the rest are all nimble. They all do. They all take to the air at some point. Like, you want that kind of variety too. And I think it's working for Statlander. Anna Jay looked good as well in this one. She's back in her Zatanna gear. It's been a while since I've seen Anna Jay. I don't know if this was a new thing or not, but good for her. And Sky Blue, man, might be turning a page on Sky Blue. Might be turning the corner here. You know, because I last year I thought she was tedious and boring, and I didn't think she was very good. In this match here, not only did I think she was pretty good, she ate shit. Like, she ate complete shit throughout the entire match, and bumping for everyone. She's like, you know, she's the bumper for the division. Like, she ate so many big bumps here that neither of the other three ladies took as big, you know? Look, is it the switch of role, you know, where now she's a spooky girl, spooky goth girl with her pal Julia, that's reawakening something. I feel she looks motivated. I feel she's working harder. She doesn't come across as sloppy. I think this is something that might be suiting her. Look, I'm not suddenly saying that all of a sudden she's, you know, fucking Bruno Sammartino, you know, and one of the greatest wrestlers that ever existed. But I think there's a definite improvement. I've noticed it over the past few matches that she's had, and it sort of struck me last night, where she's like, Jesus, she's really working hard. And there was a whole bit too when they were doing, I think they might have been doing, they might be flipping camera. There was a time where they were paired off towards the start of, early in the match, anyway, they were paired off, and Sky was working really hard, and I was like, does she know the camera's not on her right now? You know, it's like, it was tremendous, it was really good. It was good, good, good. They tease Willow versus Chris, you know, which is something that, you know, probably is inevitable. Willow wins with the babe with the power bomb on Anna Jay. After the match, Julia Hart shows up. Plasters Nightingale with the TBS title. This sets up the match for Dynasty as well. So we have that match that's announced, confirmed, booked for the pay-per-view. And Mercedes Moné, who was out, I forgot to mention, she came out to some good reactions from the crowd. The Quebec City faithful were very excited to see Double M, Marcus Mathers. come to the ring and do the ring. So she did ringside commentary. So of course I have no idea how it went. I don't know how she sounded. I don't know how it went, but she came out to a big reaction. So she stares down Julia Hart after the match. So we've got Mercedes Moné in the TBS title environment, which I kind of dig. I think it's good. You give her something to do. Meanwhile, you're doing whatever the hell you're doing. You know, you keep doing your thing with Tony Timeless and whoever they're lining up as a contender. But right now, like the TBS title solar system is very good. I find it's dynamic. There's stuff going on. There's stories. And speaking of stories, Statlander loses again. Willow wins, Statlander loses. This has been the story for weeks now, where Statlander just can't seem to get a win, can't seem to get a one on top of Nightingale, or, you know, Willow's been racking up the matches, and the wins, excuse me, I'll get this right. And, you know, meanwhile, Stokely is trying to get Statlander to cheat. He's like, you know, giving her chains and international objects and whatnot. And I think this is going to be the catalyst. This is it. This is where it's going to be here. Like, at some point, Chris is going to cheat. She's going to get a win. And this is going to start creating friction between her and Willow. I don't necessarily think she's going to outright turn on Willow, but it's going to create some friction. And Stokely, of course, is going to go with she's going to go with Statlander, because he doesn't give a fuck. you know, he knows wins a win equals a bigger payday. So what do you think he's going to do? And look, it's when people tell me there's no stories in the women's division, there's no, you know, outside of the world title situation, then everyone is always doing these random matches. Look at what happened in this multi-women match. You got, and for the past few weeks, and I've said it here as well, you keep having these stories told as we keep moving forward. And this story is there, but you have to be paying attention to see it, because it's not being driven down your throat with video packages every week. So you have to pay attention. So you have a story for the TBS title, right? Which is Julia and Willow at this point, with a little Mercedes Moné sprinkled on top. Then you have Willow and Statlander, which is happening on the side. And then you have, well, Timeless Tony right now is still embroiled with Perazzo, and now she's got Thunder Rosa on her heels. There's all sorts of stuff going on. There's stories brewing everywhere. And there's even tension between Deonna Purrazzo and Thunder Rosa, right? Remember that? Oh, but there's no stories being told in the women's division. I hear often. You're just not paying attention. Or you want someone to read a book out to you, you know. Anyway, a good little match. I enjoyed that. By the way, just as a footnote, since we're talking about the women's division here right now, Timeless Tony came out during the Rampage tapings, you know, with Mariah May, and Mariah May had a match, so Tony came and Tony Storm. Timeless Tony. Jesus fucking Christ, Warren. Timeless Tony came out and cut an in-ring promo. And the audience, the Quebecois audience, was not excited about this. And I'll be curious to see how it comes out on Rampage, but there were very pronounced on s'en calisse chants, which is a Quebecois expression, which basically means who gives a fuck. Or we don't fucking care, if you prefer. A little harsh, but it was pretty loud. We'll see what happens there. Speaking of Rampage, we have Dustin Rhodes in an interview backstage. Butcher arrives to challenge him to a fight for Rampage. You know, Dustin says, you know, I'm 55. I still have the passion. I want to go. So Butcher's like, all right, let's go then. Spoiler alert, this week's Rampage is 100% skippable. Just as much as I thought that, you know, I was like, oh, Dustin and Butcher, this will be a nice, you know, a good old brawl. Can 100% skip it. I'm not giving any spoilers, so, but. Then we get footage of Tony Storm with the Turner Classics movie guy. I don't remember his name. You know, it's interesting to me. The last time I saw them do Tony Storm with the Turner Classic Movies guy was when they were in Montreal. And I remember saying right here, and you know, when I saw the show and I came back and I did the review, I was like, no one knew who this guy was. You know, like no one in that arena was like, oh, hey, it's that. And so they do it again in another arena where no one knows who he is. You know, where people are like, what the, who is this guy? What's going on? Like, no one knows what Turner Classic Movies is here in town. Like, no one. We're not going to pretend that this didn't go over. So it's funny. They do it in two markets where TCM is just like completely oblivious to the market itself. Then we have the other AEW World Tag Team title tournament quarterfinal match where the best friends, why did my voice do that, defeated the Undisputed Kingdom. Fun little match. I thought this was the weakest of the show, but still, I thought it was fun. I thought it was pretty good. So, you know, when this is the bar, it's pretty good. You know, I think Cage Match went a little rough on it. 5.79. I think that's rough. There were some good spots. It was fun. People chanting at Mike Bennett in French. And he was going, looking at them and saying, I don't know what you're saying, you know. It was fun. There's some dick punching and some low blows and all that stuff. Orange Cassidy gets the win. It was fine. Fun. You know, a good little crowd pleaser. After the match, the Young Bucks show up to make sure we understand that they're squaring up against the best friends next week in the semifinals, right? We're already there. Have Kyle O'Reilly continuing down his road of earnest, well-spoken, calm interviews. Still feels good about doing it alone, despite the fact that the Kingdom came to celebrate with him after he beat Brian Keith. I still think this is going for Kyle O'Reilly versus Roderick Strong. Back from commercial, we get the Adam Copeland video package that we talked about. And that leads us to our world title number one contendership match where Swerve Strickland defeated Kinesuke Takeshita. He is going to be facing Samoan Joseph at the Dynasty pay-per-view. This match rocked. Just some tremendous action from top to bottom from both guys who just brought it. They just brought it. They're like, all right, let's go. We're going to have a big-ass match. They went hard on each other. Went really, really brutal on each other. Man, Takeshita is special, you know, and I understand the role that he's playing in right now, but yeah, I would be hard-pressed to not believe that Tony Khan doesn't understand how special Takeshita is. I think Tony Khan knows what he has, but for some reason look, we can go back to last year and when Takeshita was popping up on AEW before he got signed and how he got over with his work. And I think this is like, that's his strength. I still think babyface Kinesuke Takeshita in AEW is a layup. You let the guy have matches, I think you have yourself a superstar. I think it's a layup. But we're still treading on water. We're still treading. We're being touch and go with it. I also see the story panning out where, you know, eventually Takeshita, you know, he's not winning matches. He's aligned with Don Callis, but he's losing the big ones. He's like, no, you're not doing me any good. And then he turns on Callis and Callis gets mad. And then we have a whole feud. And why not Kyle Fletcher versus Kinesuke Takeshita? I mean, I'd be down for that. How this is going to eventually turn out. But right now, you know, you're like, what is that? And Swerve Strickland, I'm not taking it away with anything from him. He's just a star. And you see him live, you know, he's got big room energy. He's got the charisma. He's got the presence. He understands how to perform. He's athletic. I've been harping on Swerve for a while. You all know this, but, you know, it's nice to see that we're getting closer to the target, right? And this turned into a match that I had a blast watching. There was that evil-looking stomp that Strickland did on Takeshita on the apron. I didn't know how it looked on camera, but from our vantage point, oh, it looks so nasty. It looked like he landed on his face and just a mess. The poison run into the blue thunderbomb by Takeshita was outrageous. It ruled. Just a great main event. Swerve does the top rope stomp and Kinesuke kicks out, so he has to finish him off with the JML driver. Not the finisher this week. JML Driver for the win. Look, they're doing everything right with Swerve, and this was the good spot. Super over in the crowd. Everyone loves Swerve. That's just how it is. So the championship chase has been very good. Then, you know, Joe pops up on screen and was like, "Yeah, come out, Joe," but he didn't. And he expresses his discontent at this situation. He did not want to face Swerve. Now Swerve is the number one contender. The rankings now have been released by Tony Khan to confirm that. You know, you look at, let me pull them up here. I'm not prepared because I wasn't planning on talking about the AEW rankings, but you know, you take a look at these singles champions: Samoa Joe, Adam Copeland, Roderick Strong, Kazuchika Okada. Like, you look at the pictures there. Like, holy shit. And then the contenders: Swerve, Orange Cassidy, Mox, Will Ospreay, Danielson. It's as close to a dream fed that we'll have seen in our lifetime. Do you realize, like, when you look at it, when it's presented to you right here, you're like, Jesus, what a promotion. It's so incredibly badass. There you go, look. That's my final thoughts there. My final thoughts on a very good AEW Dynamite, which I had a tremendous time being there live, but because the show was so good. It was a really, really good episode of Dynamite. I didn't have a problem with the video packages. There was virtually no nonsense. Everyone brought their working boots. I enjoyed this tremendously. And there you go. I hope you did too, but I mostly hope you enjoyed this review. That's what I'm here for. If you did, leave a like. If you didn't, don't. If you want more out of this face right here, well, subscribe to the Mr. Warren Hayes channel on youtube.com/Mr. Warren Hayes or on your favorite podcast application. I'm there as well. Thank you all once again for joining me today, and I'll see you next time.